Welcome to Casting Hope, a sermon podcast of Hope Presbyterian Church in Columbus, Ohio. My name is Joe Hack, pastor at Hope, and we are so glad that you are listening in. We would love to connect with you in person at our Sunday gathering. In the meantime, we hope this message points you to Jesus, the reason we gather.
You're not awake now, whatever that was. So I live next door, if you've been to our house, you know this, I live next door to a rental property. And a few years ago, the landlord of this property decided to freshen up their property in between tenants. This is a common thing. And in this moment, it really needed it. It really, really needed it. The property was falling apart. The wood window frames were rotted. The eaves were basically a colony of squirrel, you know, a half of the squirrel colonies. I could go on and on. But instead of tearing down, digging deep, instead of rebuilding from the inside out, this landlord just pasted on new signage. And here's the thing. It was super disorienting as a next-door neighbor because the place suddenly looked amazing. I have to hand it to him. On the outside. But those with eyes to see knew and know that it's broken on the inside. It's rotten, actually, on the inside. And what is disorienting to me is that the shiny exterior does not match the rotten interior at all. Now, I'm being critical, but I'm totally honest. This kind of thing shows up in my own life. So if you were just to take the car I drive, for example, I take pride on a clean car. Like, that's a point of pride for me, just ask my family. I love washing my car. It's so fun. Go to the self-wash. The do-it-yourself. That is even more fun. It is. But open the armrest console and see what you will find. It looks like a kid's junk drawer. I don't know what's growing in there. And I don't care. Why? Because it's not on the outside. That's why. It's not visible. You can't see it. Now, I'm tempted to do the same exact thing in my walk with Jesus. So, for instance, I know how to say all the right things about God. I crushed my seminary classes. I was handpicked to be a teacher's aide or a theologian. I studied for years to pass, like, the pastor's equivalent of medical boards. Today, I read books and books and books on God and on Jesus, and I wince when I hear irresponsible things being said about the Bible, or about Jesus, or about God. And it must be said that in our secular age, which we're all living in, this alone grants me all kind of credibility that I do not deserve. Because to the average person on the street, Christian theology is rare, right? That's rare. That's not a common thing. And this makes people automatically think that I'm a mature Christian. But as the theologian, the late theologian J.I. Packer pointed out in his book, Knowing God, 100 years ago, like, knowing theology was like how we know sports. That's no pat on the back. His point is that anybody can say accurate things about God. Anybody can say accurate things about God. The real question is this. Does the God talk go deep? Does the God talk go deep? Or is it all on the surface? Put another way this. Is this. Am I a Christ follower? Or am I a view holder? You see the difference? Too often, I'm content with finding, studying, and then holding the right biblical views on X, Y, and Z. I'm told that the late philosopher, the theologian, Dallas Willard, called this, what I'm describing, the great omission. What does he mean? Well, you might know that Jesus gave the great commission. Go and what? Make disciples. Make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and then what? In teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And this is the great commission. Make disciples of Jesus who gradually look and live and are experienced by others in the way Jesus looked and lived and was experienced by others. But according to Willard, we have omitted this central commission. We don't really do Jesus. We hold views about Jesus. Most of us stop with affirmation of truth, not imitation of the person. But according to Willard, a disciple is a learner, a student, apprentice, practitioner. Disciples of Jesus are people who do not just profess certain views as their own, but apply their growing understanding of life in the kingdom of the heavens to every aspect of their life on earth. And Jesus, I think, summarizes this problem in verse 46 of the text that we heard Julie read. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Ouch. You know, Jesus, imagine him, he's doing what theologians have called the Sermon on the Plain. Because remember, he came down from the mountain and started teaching. And there's Pharisees present, and there's just onlookers present. And just imagine him looking at these dear people in the eyes and saying these words. Basically saying, you say the right things, good job. But your lived life, you know, the person who holds the views, it doesn't look like them. If you were with us last week with Wes, he helped us see that Jesus has a word for this. Do you remember what he called some of the folks in the crowd? Verse 42, he says, what? You hypocrites. Hypocrites. So, this word is actually from the Greek word for actor. And I kind of wish our English translations just called it that instead of hypocrite. Jesus saying, you actors, wouldn't that have an impact if you read it that way? Because everybody knows an actor has two lives. Everybody knows an actor has two lives. The sort of stage persona, whatever act or part they're playing, and then the real life. We know that Forrest Gump is not Tom Hanks. Actors are hypocrites. By design, by definition. Their inner life doesn't match their outer life. But Jesus says we are all susceptible to something like this in the religious life, doesn't he? And in our text this morning, I see him calling out two versions of religious acumen or hypocrisy. What I will call this morning, first, the Lord, Lord hypocrisy. As he says here in verse 46 on the screen, this is when somebody is not just devoted to God, but like double devoted to God. They're not just Lord, they're Lord, Lord. You know what I mean? Lord, Lord Christians. But these double external shows of devotion is not matched by a corresponding double depth. Maybe it's the person knows there's not a depth, and so that's why they amplify what is on the outside and what is more measurable. And then there are those that I would call fandom hypocrisy. Fandom hypocrisy. This is when somebody gives Jesus so much time, so much of their life, but it's not interested in following Jesus. They're fans, but they're not followers. It's like your favorite musician. You travel to all their shows. You listen to them a lot, on repeat, throughout the day. But you're not learning how to play or sing like your favorite musician. You're not being mentored by your favorite musician. You're just a fan. And so you are giving so much time and so much of your ears and so much of even your money to this musician. But it's fandom. It's not followership. You see? Because you're not being shaped into their likeness. And so this is when, with Jesus, you don't have a master-apprentice relationship. You have an entertainer-consumer relationship with Jesus. In fact, scholars believe that Jesus is riffing on a passage on verse 46 that comes from Ezekiel. So Ezekiel says, "You are very entertaining to them, Israel. Like someone who sings love songs with a beautiful voice or plays fine music on an instrument. They hear what you say, but they don't act on it." So we too, we want a good worship experience. We want good teaching. We want an inspiring message. We want the fire insurance when we die that Jesus can bring us. But our inner lives don't match the way of Jesus. Why? Because they don't need to. We're just consumers. And Jesus is just spiritual entertainment. Well, Jesus calls us to something totally different. Instead of this life of hypocrisy, of acting, he invites each of us in this text into a life of integrity. I want you to notice how Jesus illustrates hypocrisy in this passage with its opposite, integrity. Because hypocrisy is when the inner does not match the outer. Integrity is the opposite. When the inner and the outer match. When the outer and the inner match. And so look at this really simple but profound illustration that Jesus gives us for integrity. He says, "No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars." And so the scholar Diane Chin, she says, integrity is when the inner matches the outer. This is integrity. And if that's true, then trees have perfect integrity. If you think about it. The outer life of a tree, the fruit, matches the inner life of the tree without fail. There's a one-to-one correspondence of what's inside and invisible and what is outside and visible. Now, I have two trees in my backyard, and I know for a fact that one is dead, and that is because it has no leaves right now. And I don't have to think too hard about it. See, trees have inherent integrity. Inherent integrity. The external leaves and fruit will always lead us to the internal reality of the tree. And then Jesus illustrates integrity with a different image in verse 45, talking about a good man who brings good things out of the good stored in his heart. And then an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. And then he says, "For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." And so integrity, in this sense, is like a person cleaning their basement. They carry out what is stored in the depths and what is hidden, and it just sits there for all the world to see. We recently cleaned out our basement storage, and we did what this passage kind of describes, actually. We took the things hidden in the depths of our house, and we put it on the curb. And so for a few days before the trash came, our curb was like a public museum for the first 20 years of our marriage. In our life together, college coursework sitting on the curb, old pieces of furniture on the curb. I mean, somebody might be learning a lot of things from Covenant Seminary right now if they picked up that bin with all of my notes. I kept my CDs, thank you very much. Even though I have nothing to play them on, I kept my CDs. But this is a powerful illustration, I think, of integrity, right? Unlike hypocrisy, this is when the outside, what is on the curb, matches the inside, what is in the depths. Hypocrisy does its best to hide, to keep hidden the inner life. But as Chen points out, hypocrisy is always temporary. The outer eventually matches the inner. And it may not be in this lifetime. But as Jesus alludes to in his own words, we'll get to, with the flood, eventually the inner is exposed. So it's always temporary. Hypocrisy is always temporary. And I believe Jesus is calling each of us away from a deepening, incremental hypocrisy in this direction, and he's calling us to turn around and start walking towards a deepening, incremental integrity. That's what he's calling each of us to do this morning. No matter where you're standing on that path, he's just calling you to stop walking in continual, deepening hypocrisy where the outer and the inner don't match and it's okay with you, to turning and saying, you know what? I want to incrementally, Jesus, with fits and starts, begin to align. I want my life to align. My inner, my outer, my inner. I want integrity, Jesus. And that's what he's summoning us to this morning. An everyday apprenticeship to Jesus. Now, how can we participate in this? I want to briefly engage the text on a little bit of a deeper level with you. And I see two invitations. First is this. We must explore our inner life. To have this integrity, this alignment in increments and growth, we must be willing to go beneath the surface of our life. If you look again at verse 45, notice these words, store in heart. Jesus wants us to know and to explore what it is that we are storing in our heart. And this is in line with the Bible Jesus read. Like, the book of Proverbs is all about the heart. In fact, Proverbs says, our life is lived downstream from the heart. And everything flows from the heart, ultimately. Our words and our actions flow from the deeper reality of what is really there. And that's why we pay attention as believers, as followers of Jesus, to our imagination, to our desires, to our boredoms, to our fears, to our emotions. Not just our actions, but our motivations. In verse 47, Jesus compares two houses. If you grew up in church, this is a very familiar image maybe to you. Jesus says, to everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them in practice, I will show you what they're like. They're like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. And when a flood came, the torrent struck, the house but could not shake it. Why? Because it was well built. And then he compares this house to one that did not dig deep, which was washed away. So do you notice, in Jesus' image here, one house has structural integrity and the other doesn't. One gets swept away by water, the other does not. What is the difference between the two? Well, Jesus told us. One builder did what? Dug deep. In fact, Jesus uses two words in this. If you look at verse 48, it says, who dug down deep. The two verbs he says when he says this is dig, dug down. Dig, dug down. It's like I cooked, really cooked. Dinner last night. He's emphasizing it. He's saying that this builder who cares about structural integrity dug. And was okay with the mud and the dirt and the mess and the cleanup afterwards. Was okay with what looked like temporary messiness. Why? Because this person really wanted to go deep. For structural integrity. Here's what I've observed in life. When you start looking beneath the surface, when you don't just dig, but you do what Jesus says, dig, dug deep. When you do that, things actually on the outside look messy. They get messy. Can I get an amen? Anybody know what I'm talking about? But here's the paradox of Jesus' teaching. You're actually more secure and safer and healthier. The things on the outside get messy because you're doing inner work. So what is stored up in your heart? That's the question I think Jesus wants to press you to ask right now. What are you actively storing? Because when I come, I say I, Joseph, the 99% of this, okay? My wife. And I came along and helped. But what we have to decide is what we're going to store and what we're going to get rid of. If any of you have cleaned the basement, you know that's really hard. That's really hard to do. So what are you storing? Like, what are you keeping for yourself down in the depths? What is it that you care most about in the core of who you are? In this sermon that we've heard, we're coming to an end to, in this sermon on the plain, as we call it, Jesus has called us to do some remarkable things, impossible things, I would say, humanly speaking. Like, be kind to your enemies. Be gracious, be merciful, be forgiving. To live in a way that is not perpetually reactive to others, but can, with a, as Miroslav Volf calls it, with a sovereign serenity, live a life of uncommon love towards others. This is impossible unless you are storing that kind of thing from God Himself in the depths of who you are. You cannot extend that unless you have first received that and then choose to store it. In the depths of who you are, down deep. And so what are you storing in your heart? Second, we must assess our outer life. Our outer life. Jesus apparently is not just concerned with our inner contemplation, though he is, as if our outer life and actions and disciplines don't matter. This is a bit of a paradox in his teaching, but he loves to do this. He loves to lead us this way and then suddenly go this way. Jesus says, dig deep. And then he says, do, and practice. And I think he's striking a beautiful balance where we explore our heart, but then we also assess our actions. We explore our private life, both inner and private to others, and we assess our public life and how people experience us. And we're brutally honest about ourselves because we stand in the grace of Jesus, who is our older brother and who makes it possible to call God our Father in all of our church. So we, as all people, have the freedom to be honest about our outer life and the outer life of you return to me in verse 43, you'll see that Jesus is inviting us to look at the fruit of our life. Last week with Wes, Jesus said, pay attention to the speck in your eye. And I'm told that the Greek is very similar. Speck and fruit sound very similar. Is that true, Wes? Do you know that? Okay. He'll find out. He'll do some research. I'm pretty sure that those words are even very similar. So Jesus may be punning with us this morning by saying, don't just explore or assess the speck in your eye, but also assess the fruit in your life. It's possible that the Pharisees that Jesus is talking to were not assessing the fruit of their life. And Jesus is, in a way, warning us and them of those kinds of people, of those kinds of teachers. As Diane Chen writes, quote, self-deception and self-righteousness often coexist. We go hand in hand. So we must not ignore our words that we speak. We must not ignore our actions, the things we do. We must not ignore how people experience us. But we do the courageous and important work of being really honest about the fruit of it. We just have the freedom to do it because we're saved by grace, not by works. It's really important. Jesus is also inviting us to not only look at our own fruit, but to look at the fruit of other people's lives. I hinted at this a moment ago, but it is appropriate to notice when somebody's fruit is rotten in your life. You are allowed to assess rotten fruit in the life of another professing Christian. You're allowed to do that. I think Jesus is inviting it right here. In fact, scholars believe that Jesus is warning his disciples about false teachers and Pharisees. Not false teaching, false teachers. That's what I have in Russia says. He says, false teachers are very, very tricky. They're like weeds or like trees that grow fruit, but when you eat it, you're poisoned. What they give you, as one person put it, in good theology, they often take away in their life. And then these other ones. And so we pay attention. We're brutally honest about fruit. That's what Jesus wants us to do. Okay? So that's what we're going to do. And the next thing I'll say about our outer life is that we examine our outer life with a training or an apprenticeship mindset. Because I know where some of you are going right now, and if you're built like me, with a strong inner critic, you're beginning to think, oh man, I know how to inspect fruit in my life. And I know I fail. What does that mean? What does that mean? And you're on the edge of despair right now. Well, I want you to maybe put on a training or apprenticeship mindset, because I believe that's what Jesus is after in this teaching. Don't forget the purpose of his teaching. Jesus is inviting you to be his disciple, his apprentice. And what does an apprentice do? An apprentice constantly evaluates their work with their master. And as a master craftsman, we'll put it that way, when they see mistakes and failures from their apprentice, they don't say, get out of here. They say, let's work on this. I see it too. I love you. I'm committed to you. We have a master-apprentice relationship, and I'm not going to let you go. And so we approach this outer life assessment that we are invited to do here by Jesus with an apprentice mindset. It's not an act of all or nothing. I'm condemned. I'm the most amazing thing in the world. I'm condemned. I'm so godly. I'm condemned. Oh my gosh, did you see me today? I'm condemned. We're not in this when we're apprentices. Instead, we're like, Lord, You're my master. How can I greater align to you? I'm seeing this area. Others are saying there's this thing in my life or this pattern in my life that isn't in alignment with the way of Jesus. And I just want to grow in this area. That's apprenticeship. And that's inviting. And that's the way of Jesus. When a little boy is learning how to walk, and this little boy falls, we do not scold them. Because why? He's learning to walk. As an apprentice, we pick him up and we encourage him to keep training, keep learning to walk with him. Same with Jesus, to all of his disciples, to all of you. Pay attention to your inner life. Also pay attention to your outer life. And when you see things out of alignment, go to Jesus as a little child and let him pick you up and let him say to you. I'm with you always. Let's work on this. Let's work on this. I love you. And yeah, let's continue to move more into freedom, more into beauty, more into truth, more into my image. Because you are my purpose. So let's examine our inner life. Let's assess our outer life. And let's do it all on the resources of God's never failing grace. Our inner life must store the grace and kindness of God. And our outer life must be trained to rely on these sources. And that's what we do. Jesus is calling us to incremental integrity. And here's the opportunity for us. We live in an age of normalized Christian hypocrisy. The bar is dang low. Normalized. So Christians can affirm all the right things. We can state the true things on the social media of choice. And simultaneously not look a thing like Jesus and not give a rip about it. I don't know if it's a controversial statement to say that people don't experience the American conservative church the way that they would experience Jesus. Often. Not always, but often. But here's the thing, friends. What Jesus is inviting Hope to do this morning is to not simply affirm true things, hold good views like we would affirm a mathematical equation or choose a sports team. But instead, Jesus is saying, be my apprentice. And start walking with me. Start becoming more like me. Start living a life more and more incremental integrity by this. Hope, are we in or are we in? It seems like, as many have pointed out, Jesus is almost sifting crowd that he's preaching to. And this is a moment for us to say, hey, now is the morning that I'm going to walk in incremental integrity because of the grace and kindness of God. Let's be that surprise in this moment, in this age. So Lord, would you come with this audacious prayer that you would take us wherever we are on the path. And if we're getting more and more comfortable with disconnect between inner and outer, would you, by your kindness, make us deeply uncomfortable right now? So much so that we would turn and see your shining face and then choose integrity.
Thanks for listening in. For more resources like this and to learn more about Hope, please visit our website at hopechurchcolumbus.org.